Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing great today, Tim. We have a very special Christmas episode coming up on Crawl Space. But before we get to this very special Christmas episode, are you, Tim, in the very special holiday spirit?
I am, Lance. Thanks a lot for asking. I love this time of year. What do we got for our listeners today?
This is the holiday edition of Stories from the In-Between. This story is called Beastly and Ghastly. We are sort of launching the new year with this story. There'll be more stories coming up. There was a brief hiatus while the writer worked on some of these projects, but stay tuned for more stories, more of these diabolical little tales. This one in particular was narrated by a friend of ours. Not the first time she's worked on Stories from the In-Between. She did Sacrifice, last year's Christmas tale, and she also worked with you on your Thomas Palleri episode. This is Miss Sarah Sheckles, and she does all the voices you're about to hear in this episode. And for those who are a fan of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, I think you're really going to enjoy this because this is an unofficial origin story. This is the story about how Jacob Marley was able to bring himself back to the world of the living in order to warn his business partner, Ebenezer Scrooge, about the dangers of being such a horrible person.
Well, I love a good creepy ghost story around this time of year, Lance. And you can catch up with everything that Stories from the In-Between is up to at storiesfromtheinbetweenpodcast.com and on social media.
And Stories from the In-Between has quite a back catalog of stories that you can listen to by clicking the links in the show notes, or you can go to your favorite podcatcher and just search Stories from the In-Between, and you'll be able to discover these stories or, if you haven't listened in a while, rediscover them. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and enjoy Beastly and Ghastly.
There is a space between reality and fantasy, between light and dark, between rational and irrational. In this space, there are merchants, purveyors, and traders of all things of value. This space is known all over the world and has many names. Hades, Tophet, and the Inferno are just a few. Most call it Hell, and Hell is where our holiday origin story takes place. Two horrible men, damned for all eternity, suffer even more every year because here, holiday spirit cascades like poison in the air. They are Mr. Beastly and Mr. Ghastly, and all are welcome to barter and haggle with them. Come on in. The shop is open round the clock. No shirt, no shoes, no soul? No problem. All stories have an origin, even one that ends with God bless us, every one. It was Christmas Eve. Mr. Beastly could smell it in the air and pinched his nose hastily, in case any of that stinking Christmas spirit happened to make it through. But of course it was useless. The veil of this night was upon every surface, hanging in the air and making its way into tiny crevices and dark corners. There was no escaping it, even in Hell. And Hell is where this story takes place. It was here in Hell that Mr. Beastly found himself, desperately shaking the spirit of Christmas Eve off his person, in a fruitless attempt to rid himself of the offence it offered. Nearly every inhabitant of Hell detested this day, and the ones that did not were so plunged in regret and sorrow that there was no punishment worse in Hell, or even beyond. Mr. Beastly shook his arms. Thick and fat, they were still strong, and turned to complain to his partner, Mr. Ghastly.
It is worse than the previous year, this cheer I'm feeling. What do you say we close early today, eh?
But Mr. Ghastly was having none of it. His eyes flashed red with rage, and his skin darkened that special hue of green. He put a withered finger to his dark lips and licked them aggressively with his thin, forked tongue that resembled that of a snake a little too much. He smelled money, always money. Money in every corner and at any opportunity. And closing up early ran the possibility of missing a profit. What was better than to drown sorrows of such a cheerful occasion like Christmas Eve? Shopping. Mr. Ghastly was sure of it.
Close early? You are getting dumber and dumber with every stinking year that rolls by.
Mr. Ghastly spat on the ground, and whatever landed there sizzled and evaporated immediately. Hell was not a place of delight and leisure. It was hotter than the sun and more unpleasant than the sulphurous mines. Mr. Beastly looked at his partner, his evil little eyes getting smaller and more menacing, and scowled, revealing a row of frightful, sharp teeth.
I can't stand the feel of the day, that's all I'm saying. You know how it is.
He picked at a tooth with his fat finger.
It will be this way anywhere you go, so you may as well stay here.
Mr. Ghastly shook with anger, but he held back, choosing not to assault his partner just yet.
It is miserable for everyone, and we might as well profit by such pain. Look, I see a demon float towards us. You suppose he will enter and buy something? Perhaps a soul to torture at this most unpleasant time, or a curse to unleash on some mortal?
He approached the window and smiled to himself, but the smile faded the moment the demon floated by without so much as glancing at the establishment.
Bless that ugly creature!
Mr. Ghastly cursed in anger. It must be said that the establishment by the name of Beastly and Ghastly was the very center of commerce here in Hell. What it lacked in class and refinement, it made up in the variety of sinister and cruel items it kept on display. All sorts of goods could be found here, some well-known, such as a wide selection of witches' potions. And certainly, there were no shortage of witches here in Hell. Others not named, but only carefully whispered, lest the word itself escape on the wind and make some trouble. It was told that this infamous place had brought on many a plague and so many wars. It was impossible to recall them all. It had stood at the same spot for many years, and no doubt would stand here for many centuries still. How did the monstrous pair meet? When did this business commence? That was lost to times, and not even Mr. Beastly nor Mr. Ghastly could recall how they had become partners and proprietors of such a monstrosity. They both fell into this line of work as smoothly and naturally as many a politician or a self-proclaimed man of God falls into their line of work, until one day they find themselves in the hot bowels of Hell. Mr. Beastly was the older of the two and was named so precisely for his appearance and his rage. A fellow of large stature, Mr. Beastly towered over souls. His fat stomach protruded through his dark hooded robe. All anyone really saw of Mr. Beastly were his sinister dark eyes peering at them through the blackness and his big, fat arms. But it was also known that underneath that robe, Mr. Beastly was quite hideous. You see, Mr. Beastly was a vain man when he walked the earth. He started wars. He pillaged villages. He raped and murdered. All Mr. Beastly wanted was notoriety and fame, to have it all by conquest or theft. And he was unstoppable until his very end. Countless souls have suffered, and many more have perished. As things go, Mr. Beastly's ultimate punishment was that despite all he had done, not a single soul remembered his name, and his mark on the world was lost forever. Even Mr. Beastly had no recollection of what his real name was, or from what family he had come. Unknown, forgotten, erased, that was Mr. Beastly's ultimate punishment. To top it all off, he was still vain. Therefore, he put the robe over himself so as to hide his hideousness away from dead souls. Yet even that was only a temporary relief, for on occasion a demon would tear Mr. Beastly's robe down and expose his hideousness to the uproarious laughter of those around. No, there was no salvation for Mr. Beastly anywhere in hell, even though the place did suit him. Mr. Ghastly was younger than his towering partner by many centuries. Unlike Mr. Beastly, Mr. Ghastly was shriveled up and tended to resemble a mummy or a dusty old corpse. He did not care much for his appearance. All his thoughts were preoccupied with money. Mr. Ghastly salivated like a dog when he happened to catch a sniff of the magical scent of money in the air. His nose was so precise that he could tell a rich man even if he happened to be in rags. It is true that Mr. Ghastly was a successful businessman when he walked the earth. Success has many benefits, that is certain. But for a man obsessed with wealth and possessions, success only leads to misery. For no matter how much wealth Mr. Ghastly had acquired and hoarded, his soul shriveled and shrunk in proportion. It was even rumored that Mr. Ghastly had forsaken his own family, had left his sick child dying and perishing, for the surgery was too costly in Mr. Ghastly's opinion. The child was headed to the other side anyway. What was the use? The mother had followed after her child, for her heartbreak had gotten the best of her, and ruined that young soul completely. But Mr. Ghastly did not grieve, for every coin not spent was a coin saved. He was a man of massive wealth, the wealth of such proportions it was hard to imagine that it was real. Yet Mr. Ghastly had not enjoyed any of it, and as it accumulated, he had parted with a little of his humanity, until there was none of it remaining but a ghastly man, a hideous being with not a shred of decency. Is it possible that Mr. Ghastly had begun to resemble a corpse while living? Quite. Mr. Ghastly had abandoned all he knew of the world and shut himself away with his money, that never-ending money, eating nothing and smelling the precious metals underneath his sharp nose. Perhaps Ghastly did not even bother dying, preferring to save on the costs of a funeral. With no family and no will, not one soul, not even Mr. Ghastly himself, knew what had happened to all that money upon his death. Yet upon descending into hell, Mr. Ghastly had learned that he was to be a pauper for eternity. No matter the business venture, not a single coin made its way to Mr. Ghastly, and when it did, turned into ashes the moment Mr. Gastly touched it. Even now, while running a successful business, Mr. Gastly could not keep a single copper coin, not even a wooden token, for everything ended up as a heap of ash. Being addicted to wealth, this drove Mr. Gastly crazy, and every day he lived in torment, like a dog chasing its own tail. Mr. Beastly yawned, and upon inhaling some of the crisp Christmas air, began choking. Immediately he took out a little silver snuff box with a beautiful design on it and took a pinch of snuff. Mr. Gastly's eyes flashed at the sight of such an exquisite thing, a thing he himself could never afford, and he scowled.
"Beastly, why don't you go out and see if there is a shopper you can attract, huh? You big lazy sod!"
Mr. Gastly put both his scrawny arms on his hip and resembled a scarecrow. Mr. Beastly frowned and was about to swing one of his large, swollen arms at Mr. Gastly's face when a little witch slipped through the crack in the door. She was old and charred, quite roasted by the Inquisition, and her eyes shone with determination.
"This is Mr. Gastly, and before we continue with our dark and fiery holiday tale, the bills are overdue, and we must take a brief moment to hear from our sponsors."
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
Welcome back to Beastly and Ghastly. Please let us know if there is anything you'd like to take a closer look at. Nothing is off limits. You the proprietors here?
Aye, both Mr. Beastly and Mr. Gastly answered. Mr. Beastly lowered his fat arm, and Mr. Gastly rubbed his two thin hands against each other.
How can we be of help?
Mr. Gastly asked, and his lips attempted something like a smile. In truth, Mr. Gastly was scowling. His dried-up face had only moved in one direction.
"Have you any toads and adders, Fork? Gonna make yourself a spell, eh?"
Mr. Beastly licked his lips, thinking of fat toads.
"And an eye of newt, if you have it,"
the witch added.
"Sage and lavender, if that made its way to hell, but I suspect it did not."
Mr. Gastly spat and kept rubbing his hands together. His eyes sparkled with a sudden flame when the witch produced a big gold coin from her sleeve.
"Why, if it's sage and lavender you want, we'll have to get that for you,"
Mr. Gastly said.
"Why, if you want adder's fork, you can just cut Gastly's tongue off and it will serve you all the same,"
Mr. Beastly remarked. But Mr. Gastly paid him no attention. His eyes followed the gold coin as if glued to it.
"Let me get you a few things together. Oh, yes."
Mr. Gastly wobbled over to a shelf with what looked like hundreds of little drawers, none labeled, but there was no need. Mr. Gastly could get you what you wanted with his eyes closed.
"Adder's fork? A nice fat toad? Oh, yes, here's the eye of newt.
Mr. Gastly rummaged through a few little drawers, one of his eyes still on the gold coin. He licked his lips and his hands shook.
"Why, I swear we had at least lavender here. Well, will you take cotton? Just as good." "Cotton?"
The witch laughed and moved a singed piece of burnt hair out of her face.
"I said sage and lavender. Out with it, dead man, or else I will just take what you have here and move on."
But Mr. Gastly continued opening the drawers in hopes of finding even a little sage leaf. The thought of selling goods and getting more for it was too much of a thrill. It was all going so well, Mr. Gastly thought, until the witch suddenly disappeared, and her goods too. Only a single silver coin remained where she stood a moment ago.
"Ah!"
exclaimed Mr. Beastly.
"Would you look at that, Beastly?"
Mr. Gastly shouted.
"You could have helped me, you big dumb swine. What good are you to me? Why didn't you help me look? Now all we have is this silver when we could have had gold."
It was at this time that the door opened slightly, and a thin dead man walked through. If Mr. Beastly and Mr. Gastly were to lay their eyes on him, they would see that even for a dead man, he was exhausted and drained. To top it off, the man dragged heavy chains behind him, the chains that weighed him down so much it was a pitiful sight to see him go by. And what a rattle he had made! For the chain was made of deeds, cash boxes, padlocks, keys, and all sorts of rubbish that weighs a poor soul down, crushing it all the way down to hell.
"Good sirs," the stranger said meekly. "Will you let it go?"
Mr. Beastly roared towards Mr. Gastly.
"We had never had sage here, and you know if you were to have it, the smell would burn stronger than the smell of poverty itself."
"But the money,"
cried Mr. Gastly.
"The money we could have made."
The stranger got quite close to the two of them, hoping to get their attention. Unfortunately for him, at this precise moment, Mr. Beastly had raised his massive arm and swung it at his partner, who, being accustomed to such tricks, had promptly ducked. It was left to the poor chained stranger to suffer the blow of such great magnitude. It had been a wonder his skull stayed in place. All of a sudden, the stranger's lower jaw had dropped to the ground, exposing a deathly glare that was frightening even to Mr. Beastly and Mr. Gastly.
"Oh, you big dummy! Look what you had done now! Why would you punch a paying customer?"
Suddenly, the sharp smell of money had entered Mr. Ghastly's nostrils, and he looked at the stranger again, this time closely eyeing the man. Right away, Mr. Ghastly noticed that it was a man of business and a man of means while he was among the living.
A well-dressed and evidently rich-paying customer, Mr. Ghastly added silently.
Mr. Beasley did not reply, for his eyes still sparkled with wild rage. He did manage to nod at the stranger in a way of apology.
Here!
Mr. Ghastly hastily grabbed a bandage and passed it to the chain-wrapped ghost, who managed to pick up his now fallen jaw and clank the teeth together as he tied it in place.
This is a disagreeable place indeed, the stranger reflected, but I suppose it may as well be like this, for I deserve it. I deserve it all.
Mr. Beastly scoffed.
Deserve it all? What kind of a man asks for penance? Why, it may just be the foul stink of Christmas to come that had put such thoughts in your tiny head, man.
But the stranger was thoughtful and did not seem to react to these words. He shook his chains as if measuring whether the weight had gotten lighter.
I am Marley, Jacob Marley, the stranger said. I am here to buy a favor of you fine gentlemen.
Here he eyed the pair suspiciously, for the beings in front of Marley were neither fine nor gentlemen. Mr. Ghastly was excited. Even before he handed Marley the bandage, he had taken note of the man's neat pigtail and his fine waistcoat, his boots with tassels, and concluded that his purse was full and deep.
Here, here!
He motioned for Marley to approach and even bowed a little.
I am Ghastly, and this here is my partner, Beastly. Tell us your favour, for we are eager to oblige. I had a partner once, Marley exclaimed. Oh, wretched, wretched. It is on his account that I stand before you, gentlemen. You see, my partner is still among the living, and I would do anything to warn him of this fate, to have some of the harm we had managed to concoct in life undone, and undone for all eternity. For even though I am chained and quite miserable, perhaps I can at least save him from the whole nasty business. Save him before he suffers the same wretched fate. Oh!
At this, Marley's chains shook violently and produced a sound so awful the old walls of the dwelling shook.
What do you want, then?
Mr. Beastly asked, crossing his arms. He could not tolerate regret and feeling, the show of human empathy and emotions that he had never felt or understood, was too much for him.
I must make my way back to the living, Marley said. I must find a way to warn him. Make it back to the living? Are you quite mad?
Mr. Ghastly exclaimed, and his mean little eyes got smaller and more menacing. Surely this ghost was joking, for all the damned creatures know that there is no way from hell. Once you descend, you do so for eternity. Yet the man before him was wealthy. That much was clear. He had a demeanor about him not unlike the one Mr. Ghastly himself had displayed while living. The prospect of money, the possibility of once again being rich, had plunged Mr. Ghastly into thoughts of splendor, delicious thoughts. He was possessed by this possibility, and therefore could not afford to turn the stranger away. Before Mr. Beasley could speak and spoil the plan, Mr. Gastly attempted a smile. Yet smile it was not, for his leathery face could never manage such a feat, and nodded vigorously.
"Aye, for a price it can be done," Mr. Gastly continued while looking for a purse on the stranger's person, for surely it was of respectable size.
"I would give anything to undo the damage done."
Molly put his face in both his hands and cried. His shoulders shook, heavier under the weight of penance than even the weight of the chain that was upon him.
"Oh, how I want to take it all back! How miserable this existence is to me! And still I cannot change it. If time was a friend to me, if only I had seen what I see now sooner."
"Calm yourself,"
Mr. Beasley replied. He was not a man of emotion and was losing patience with their customer. By this time, Mr. Beasley had figured that there was really no remedy to buy and no favor to sell. Yet the prospect of easy money was not lost on him.
"Have you a purse?"
Mr. Gastly inquired.
"Take it."
Without so much as a protest, without a slightest bargain or concern, Jacob Marley had detached a cash box off his massive chain and threw it over to the two proprietors.
"All this only adds weight to my sorrow, and I will have no part of this greed any more."
"This is Mr. Beasley. We really don't need to take a break, but Mr. Gastly insists upon it. We'll be back shortly. Just sit tight."
"Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch Unsolved Mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the Throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
How's it going, everyone? It's Tim and Lance here. Have you ever wanted someone to read you creepy bedtime stories in the most velvety voice ever?
Well, you had me hooked at velvety, Tim. We are excited to share a podcast that is exactly that. It's called Nighty Night Bedtime Stories to Keep You Awake. And Tim, it's narrated by a friend of ours.
That's right. New York Times bestselling author and podcaster Rabia Chaudhry. Nighty Night is an anthology featuring classic horror stories this season and fictionalized true life stories in season one that are so creepy that you will realize reality is scarier than fiction.
And Tim, I know our favorite part of each episode is at the end when Rabia says, "But wait, there's more to the story." And we get to hear those fascinating details about the author and the context of the tale. What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is The Tiny Hares from season one, which takes us on a harrowing journey when the narrator runs into a dangerous man in the woods. What about you?
Well, mine comes from the current season. It's called The Horla, in which we witness the protagonist spiral into a descent of madness. Tim, I feel like I'm constantly spiraling into a descent of madness, so I really relate to that one.
Well, I hear that. So dim your lights, get under a cozy blanket, and find and subscribe to Nighty Night wherever you get your podcasts.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune in to Hometown History and embark on a journey through time right from where you are.
Finally, on with the story.
Mr. Gastly's eyes sparkled, and his tongue licked his dried-up thin lips with major excitement. But it was Mr. Beastly who picked up the cash box and promptly hid it in his robe.
"Well, then you must come back after Christmas, and it will all be arranged."
Mr. Beastly towered over the ghost, his eyes sparkling like two sinister stars.
"Can't you do something now?" Marley pleaded. "I stand here before you now and want to give this my immediate attention. Why must you hesitate and drive me further into despair?" "Calm yourself, man," Mr. Gastly chimed in. "Everyone knows that nothing can be done at Christmas, and even if we tried, we would have nothing to show for it. This is a filthy time. Can't you smell it in the air? Even the devil himself will not so much as venture out on a day such as this."
Jacob Marley looked around him and put a hand to his forehead. Even as a ghost, he acted in such a human manner. It was clear that he had died not even a decade ago. Yet the task of dragging this chain around all this time had caused quite a change, and it was clear that slowly this would wear him out. So perhaps Marley did want to make his chain a little lighter, if not through his conscience, then at least by the warning he meant to give his friend.
"Very well," Marley said. "I shall come back after Christmas."
He was about to turn and disappear when something moved in the dark corner. Mr. Beastly stepped closer to it, intending to grab whatever it was that lurked there. To him, it looked like a cat.
"Don't listen to these fools."
A voice pierced through the stillness. It was a familiar voice, and a moment later, a cat-like creature made its way into the candlelight. It was a grotesque sight. Neither an animal nor a woman, yet the face was familiar.
"Ah!" cried Mr. Gastly. "It is you again!"
And indeed, the same witch that was at the establishment earlier had materialized and now stood before the men, leaning on a bench with a smile on her burnt face. She had never left the business, but instead had transformed herself into a small mouse, and then, as befitting to any respectful witch, a cat. This whole time she sat in the dark corner, entertained by the curious exchange.
"Why, these two could not get you anything of worth," the witch proceeded. "I sure do know a pair of liars when I see them. They had tried a similar trick on me just a moment before you came." "You owe me gold," Mr. Gastly cried out suddenly.
His mind was on a shiny coin he saw and never got to have.
"I have paid you a fair share," the witch scoffed at the man.
With a smile, she approached Jacob Marley.
"So, you want to get back to the place of the living? Ha! Well, it is not for me to judge, but I can tell you the one way, the only way to do so, is to evoke the help of the spirits. I heard there are many spirits out there, but the most powerful roam this place and all others precisely on Christmas Eve. You are in luck, Jacob Marley, for you may have yourself a chance to visit your wretched partner still."
"Tell me of these spirits," Marley begged.
His voice shook with excitement at the possibility.
Don't listen to her, Mr. Beasley interjected.
He got used to the weight of a cash box by his side and did not want to part with it.
I know what I speak of.
The witch shot a glance at Mr. Beasley, and he felt himself weaken at his knees a little.
Shoo! Shoo, you beast!
Mr. Gastly started to approach the witch, but thought better of it and stopped, unsure of what to do next. It was Mr. Beastly's job to deal with difficult customers. Not even a demon would dare stand up to Mr. Beastly. Yet this witch did not seem to be bothered by either of them.
"I had done plenty of atrocities and low deeds," the witch had admitted. "We all make up for our sins here, so I may as well tell him what I know. It could just count for something one day." "Quiet, you!" Mr. Gastly cried.
But the witch had no time to respond. Before she could give Mr. Gastly a soul-draining stare, Mr. Beastly threw her to the floor. Mr. Gastly managed to grab a burning lamp off the table and pointed it at the witch.
"It was not enough for you to be burned once, was it? Must we burn you again, you foul woman?"
At this, the witch began to shriek and laugh. A laugh so violent and ugly, it turned Mr. Beastly's stomach, and Mr. Gastly looked away from her for fear of meeting that nasty, menacing gaze.
"Stop! Stop what you are doing!"
Marley implored. He had never seen such violence before. He shook his chains as hard as he could, and the sound seemed to almost break the little establishment into pieces. In this racket, the witch had a moment to cast a spell or two, and suddenly the flames sprang up from thin air, their fiery tongues licking at the furniture and the walls.
"What is this?"
cried Mr. Gastly, his mind grasping at the magnitude of the damage to be done and the goods that would certainly perish. Money turned to ash.
"Stop this! Stop!"
But it was too late. The witch had climbed up to the ceiling, still laughing her menacing sharp laugh, until she was turned into an ugly cat. The cat paused at the beam where a little wood had rotted, and its eyes met those of the ghost in chains.
"Jacob Marley,"
the disfigured voice called out,
"you must not be deterred by the love that still lives in your heart. Search it for kindness and cry for forgiveness. Invoke the Christmas spirit's name, and if you do a good job of it, surely they will hear you. It will hurt you to do so, we know, but you must, for it is the only way. You will never know how the spirits will accomplish this task or when, for mystery is part of that bargain. Just remember the love you still have, and you don't let it die here."
With that, the cat quickly slipped through that crack and was gone. It was no use to try and save the store. All the tinctures and torture devices, books of curses and jars of tears had been engulfed by the flames as fast as a stack of hay. Mr. Beastly and Mr. Gastly stood outside while the shadows of the flames reflected off their dead, dark faces, teasing them both. It was quite an event, this fire. Demons appeared, laughing and shouting with delight, bathing in the flames, throwing ashes all around them like snowballs. The damned souls also came to watch, each laughing and rejoicing at the misfortune of another. Jacob Marley did not stay long. The delighted howls of the demons had drove him away, and besides, he had other matters on his mind. How many years had he been forced to travel the earth in chains? he could not recall. The time was not on his side, and he had to make haste. It would be a difficult task to appeal to Christmas spirits, but he knew he had to try. It was hard to stop the commotion, and after some time, Mr. Beastly and Mr. Ghastly stopped and gave up. There was no use trying to save anything, no use trying to get help. There is no sympathy in hell. When the place was reduced to a few burning cinders, Mr. Beastly looked at Mr. Ghastly, who had shrunk even more somehow. His little eyes glowed and were as bright as embers with anger. Mr. Beastly rubbed his massive stomach and remembered the cash box he had gotten from Jacob Marley earlier. It was still hanging off his belt, under the big robe.
"Look here, Ghastly. Cheer up."
Mr. Beastly gave his partner a glimpse of what he had.
"We may just be okay. Let me handle it."
Yet Mr. Ghastly could not contain himself.
"Let me have it,"
he screamed, and extended his shaking hands toward Mr. Beastly.
"Calm yourself," Mr. Beastly said. "I cannot let you lay your hands on this cash box. Have you forgotten your punishment here?"
It seemed, for a moment, that Mr. Ghastly had retreated. He stood still as if thinking. Mr. Beastly had turned away for a moment, and that is when Mr. Ghastly grabbed the cash box off of Mr. Beastly's belt and hurriedly dug his hands into its contents. Mr. Beastly heard the clinking sound of coins and then silence. In the light of the dying blaze, Mr. Ghastly stood holding a cash box filled only with ashes. Beastly and Ghastly was written in blood by Pi Rational Writer, with characters based on Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. All voices in Beastly and Ghastly's hellscape are brought to life and brought to death by Sarah Sheckles. Beastly and Ghastly is pleasing to the ear, even in hell, because of Mr. David Williams, who is responsible for the post-production audio mastering, score, and ambiance. Thank you for frequenting Beastly and Ghastly. We appreciate your business and hope you will seek to return very soon.